superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
In a world where the Twin Ports needed more, comes Better Bus Blueprint.
The bus system in Duluth and Superior is changing, and for the next week, it's free.
So the entire bus system is free through September 9th.
But they're not without problems.
With a battery-powered bus, you need 6 to 8 hours to recharge the thing.
Plus, he's the longtime music director of Big Top Chautauqua, and he's bringing his sounds to Duluth as well.
Lasts a long time.
We'll catch up with Ed Willett.
In these fast and swirling endless sands, it's shown me a sign.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Yes, you heard us correctly. The DTA buses serving Duluth and Superior are free through September 9th. It's part of helping riders get used to a reconfiguration of the bus system that changes some routes and bus stops with the goal of achieving more efficient services, including more frequent buses. It's called the Better Bus Blueprint, and we'll have more about it coming up. But first, a different bus story, dating back to 2018, when the DTA took delivery on 7 new battery-powered buses as part of a pilot program sponsored by the Federal Transit Administration. The idea was to see how well the buses would hold up in extreme cold weather. There were some growing pains at first, both with charging the buses and difficulty not with the temperature, but in handling the steep hills of Duluth. Those were worked out, but a year ago this month, researchers from a division of the U.S. Department of Energy issued a final report on the project, which has largely gone unreported in the media until now. A key finding stated that the battery buses were available for use 51.8% of the time, compared to 88.4% for diesel buses. Transit activists have noticed the report. One is Evan Foss, an engineer in Boston, where the transit system has just approved acquiring its own battery bus fleet. And he joins me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Evan.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into the problems, what's wrong with the basic concept of battery buses? Electric cars are taking off, and you certainly don't see many Tesla drivers shelling out money at the gas pump.
Well, people have a misunderstanding of how a bus is used. The bus, unlike a car, does not spend most of its life sitting in a parking lot. So with an electric car, you have plenty of time to recharge it. With a battery-powered bus, you need 6 to 8 hours to recharge the thing. So the use case fundamentally changes the way the technology is applied.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of what the performance numbers would indicate. Again, the federal studies show that they're available for service almost 52% of the time compared to diesel buses at 88.4%. Is that really concerning or just growing pains as we adopt the new technology?
I think it is really concerning because the other aspect to this is that, according to the study, they cost double what a diesel bus costs. If the goal is to actually reduce the amount of CO2 we're emitting, the goal ought to be to run as frequent a service as possible to encourage people to get out of their cars. Doubling the price of your vehicle just makes it more difficult to actually deliver the service. And if you're doubling the price of your vehicle while delivering a vehicle that, according to the study, achieves not just 50% availability, but when it is in service, about a quarter of the actual miles per bus, you're not doing any better. You're doing a lot worse.
Another statistic in the study is that the battery buses average 1,115 monthly miles per bus. This is lower than the baseline diesel bus average of 4,095 monthly miles. Is that like saying your Tesla has to stay in a garage 3 times longer than a gasoline vehicle?
Well, I don't know how else to put it, really. You've multiplied the price and you've divided the performance. The study makes a lot of hay out of the disruptions they had in their supply chain from COVID. But what I'm looking at is a poorly designed vehicle and a poorly thought out plan. And on top of all of this, let's not forget that these battery-powered buses are still burning diesel fuel. The bus itself still has a diesel-powered heater, which partway through the study they had to alter the programming on to burn more often.
And the diesel fuel you're referring to is for a diesel heater on the bus, which is needed because the battery cannot adequately heat the bus in the extreme cold.
Yeah. You know, there are things in here that are forgivable that I'm sure are just teething problems they'll get past. For example, in the cold weather, they had trouble with the bus in general and with the battery. But in warmer weather, they started having trouble with the electric drive system. I feel like the electric drive system is something that they'll figure out. That problem will get solved. But the battery part of it and the general bus part of it are going to take longer.
And lastly, the DTA buses are made by Proterra of South Carolina, which just declared bankruptcy last month. Any thought on that one, Evan? It's Chapter 11, so that's reorganization. That's not a complete shutdown.
Well, they were the largest supplier of battery-powered buses to American transit agencies. They now have these battery-powered buses that I regard more as a prototype than an actual finished product. And the transit systems may have a harder time getting replacement parts. To be clear, I'm obviously not against electrifying public transportation. The frustrating thing is that there is a way to do a fully electric, fully, you know, zero emission transportation system like this. And it's the trackless trolley system.
That's the buses that have rubber wheels, but have a trolley pole and lines overhead.
Yes, which Boston is frustratingly ripping out to make way for this.
We've been speaking with Evan Foss. He's a transit activist in Boston, primarily concerned about battery-powered buses being deployed in that city, which follows a test of the buses by the Duluth Transit Authority in the Twin Ports. Thank you for joining us, Evan.
Thank you for having me.
We're now joined by David Clark, the Director of Marketing for the Duluth Transit Authority. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, David.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we were reviewing the U.S. Department of Energy study that was released last year. Their findings included that the battery buses were available for use 51.8% of the time, compared to diesel buses at 88.4% of the time. The report does not criticize the program or make a recommendation for or against battery buses. But we did speak with a transit activist from Boston who raised concerns about them because his city is looking at the same thing. He says the performance numbers are less than desired because it's different from having an electric car like a Tesla, because a private car is intended to be a garage for much longer periods of time than a transit vehicle. So is the DTA concerned about those performance numbers?
Well, it's when you look at the overall performance of the 7 battery electric Proterras that we have in our fleet, we were amongst the first networks in the entire country to deploy battery electric buses. So therefore, we were part of a pilot program. And really, both our geography and our climate proved to be a really great testing ground for new technology. And in partnership with Proterra, we helped them bring their first generation of battery electrics to life. And that was beginning in 2016. Now, a new technology deployed in a new industry is, of course, going to be met with some challenges and opportunities to learn and grow from. And during the first few years of the project, we learned that in our climate, a battery electric bus performs best in 60 degree weather, let's say as baseline. Mm-hmm. We extend much colder than that and a bit warmer than that. So it really has a little bit to do with climate, and it had a little bit to do with learning what we didn't know about incorporating a new technology where you have to provide a different maintenance cycle. There's different technology aboard, different chips, different sensors, and so on. So a little bit of that availability could be owed to the learning curve that was being experienced in the first couple of years. We have, since the initial order of 7 battery electric Proterras, placed an order for 2 more to add to our fleet. And that complements the continued order of our traditional diesel fleet that we have had to continue to order to meet the needs of our transit system. So really, it's not a one-to-one replacement today yet with the fleet that we have in the battery environment. The reliability of the chargers and the learning curve to both maintain and deploy the fleet of battery vehicles has made it so that you get a little bit less availability out of those buses simply by the nature of piloting a new product in a challenging market. And when I say challenging, that goes back to both the geography and the climate.
Right, which is, of course, the whole reason for the pilot program. I mean, they picked us because, you know, we're not quite International Falls in their icebox or whatever they call themselves, but we're close. So, yeah. And actually, quite seriously, we're probably the largest transit system in the icebox area.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when they looked at systems to collaborate with, we really checked all the boxes in terms of size. You know, we're really truly a medium-sized transit system with, you know, nearly 100 buses, and we're serving between 7 and 12,000 people a day. So, and now we've ordered the fifth generation of buses, and we're excited to try those couple of buses on our network likely next year once they're built and commissioned, and really see what the advancement has been in the technology. And that will help kind of guide our electrification program in the future in terms of, you know, what we can predict and what we can project as a viable proportion of our system to be electrified.
Mm-hmm. Another part of the study says that the battery buses averaged 1,115 monthly miles versus 4,095 monthly miles for diesel buses. That may be a little bit different way of looking at it, but does that affect their cost effectiveness? Because the battery buses cost a lot more.
Well, it's hard to really say. It's not apples to apples because those buses, the first fleet of buses that were electric, were subsidized as part of a grant. So when we looked at our overall budget, sort of the return on investment wasn't as important as understanding the battery technology and the future of it. But when, from a business perspective, the first generation of buses that we received, of course, was more costly to run per mile that was actualized by the bus. Yeah. But that's just one metric in a pile of metrics that you could look at depending on what your perspective was or what your intentions of, looking at the program were.
Mm-hmm. And the third concern was the diesel heaters on the buses. That affects the energy efficiency. So does that cut into the advantage of the battery bus?
Well, admittedly, the supplementary fuel-powered heater was the only way that we could stand up the program just because of the draw on the battery from the HVAC. And that's also true of the cooling system.
Mm-hmm. And I should say HVAC is heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
But, you know, when you look at the first generation battery of a new product, you know, looking back retroactively at the program, yes, it did impact the effectiveness of it. Of course, you're using far less traditional fuel on an electric bus, even despite the fact it does have a supplemental HVAC system on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
But that is of note, and it is a real aspect of the program, was that the batteries deployed in this first generation that we had didn't have the capacity to both power the bus for an entire shift and also keep the passengers and driver comfortable in terms of climate.
Right. So you're getting two new buses. Are they improvements over actually everything we're just talking about?
From their technical specifications, yes. But we'll know more when we get a chance to deploy them on our streets and get a chance to take a look at what the delta or the change in performance looks like for those new buses.
Mm-hmm. And again, they're by Proterra, a company from South Carolina, which 2 weeks ago declared bankruptcy, Chapter 11. So this reorganization, they're not closing up shop. But any concerns about that?
Well, from our perspective, our talented team of mechanics is fully up to speed on all the needs and concerns around maintaining and keeping those seven Proterras that we have on the streets. When you look into the future, anytime a company goes into bankruptcy, and granted this case, just Chapter 11 protection, it obviously is concerning to some degree, but that's not something, we have a lot of perspective on what that will look like in the future for that company. And regardless, there are several bus manufacturers that have stepped into the electrified bus arena. So the health of electric vehicles in the context of a transit fleet looks to be continuing to move along and progress at a pace that looks promising.
We're speaking with David Clark, the Director of Marketing for the DTA. We're talking about battery buses as a federally sponsored pilot program that was testing their operation in extreme weather. And now we want to switch gears, if you will, to talk about the whole system and free rides for the next week. David, you just announced the Better Bus Blueprint. Tell us about it.
Sure. So the Better Bus Blueprint comes from a comprehensive study in order to find a better transit system for the future of the Twin Ports. We took a lot of surveys, worked with community stakeholder groups and local leaders, and developed a comprehensive system redesign, which launched August 27th. And we are offering free service on the new system through September 9th. So passengers can expect all new routing with new bus numbers, new bus stops, and new vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks have already responded positively to the higher frequency trips to key locations like colleges, universities, the mall, healthcare locations, and those places we all visit frequently throughout our day. Better weekend service, more consistent, and also runs longer later into the evenings and begins earlier in the morning for folks with schedules at work that would complement that change. So we encourage folks to come down and take a spin on the new bus system. You can find a little more about it at duluthtransit.com or downloading the free transit app.
I want to share a video from the DTA with the plan done up as kind of a movie trailer. Here it is.
In a world where the Twin Ports needed more, from the producers of Current Bus Service comes Better Bus Blueprint. Bigger, bluer, more wheels. Just look at that thing. Critics are saying, get on the bus. This summer's biggest blockbuster might just be a bus system. In Corridors, August 27th.
And that was a video by the DTA introducing the Better Bus Blueprint. You said part of the efficiencies are achieved by eliminating some stops. There's actually one practically right outside my door of my house that I use occasionally. That's going away, but I know that there's a differently abled person down the street whose stop has been preserved. So, you know, I know that you had a lot of thought behind these.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a Better Bus Stops program that was part of the plan. And in optimizing the bus stops and where those stops were located, we were able to increase the trip times and speed up service. But we wanted to preserve service in locations with differently abled residents nearby to ensure that they would have access to the system as well. So there are a lot of considerations when one or an organization attempts to rebalance a bus stop network along with its stops.
If somebody is really concerned about their stop being taken away, can they appeal at this point? Is it still a work in progress?
It is still a work in progress, and we did a survey and had a interactive website so folks could comment on specific bus stops, and that led to a large number of bus stops being preserved. Although in the space from that study until now, of course, folks have moved, and there are residents who do need access to the bus service. So there is the opportunity for folks to comment via either our website or contacting us via phone call. And we are documenting those trends and patterns, and we will make certain adjustments accordingly. Additionally, folks who have access to the Stride paratransit system will still have access to that system, which is a door-to-door dial-a-ride service that's scheduled by folks who are eligible through an application. So that provides a stopgap and another resource for folks who are further from a bus stop than they once were.
And lastly, and once again, tell us about free. We've said it three times. We want to be absolutely sure what's free.
Yes, so the entire bus system is free through September 9th. And we wanted to do that to give folks a chance to really test drive the system and ensure that they understand where they'll be traveling. We didn't want to charge folks for routes and then it wasn't quite the route they wanted or, you know, something went awry. So we really wanted to create a lot of access for everyone in the Twin Ports communities to get a chance to try the new system. And we felt that offering 14 days of free service was just the ticket.
Well, there's nothing like a free ticket. We've been speaking with David Clark, the Director of Marketing for the DTA. We've been talking all about buses, from battery buses to free rides. Thank you for joining us, David.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, the season-ending performance at Big Top and a celebration of Duluth Bethel.
Well, a ribbon will be given for the longest spiel. The story sounds tall, but I swear that it's real. We thought an apple a day would keep the doctor away. But an apple-feeling doctor wanted anyway.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. When you think of bluegrass, the cello may not be the first instrument that comes to mind, but think of it as a large fiddle or a smaller bass, and it fits right in, especially in the hands of a master. That would describe Ed Willett, whose website, or one of them, describes his cello offerings, which are only a small part of his repertoire as a longtime performer and music director with the Blue Canvas Orchestra of Big Top Chautauqua. He's been performing all summer at the tent and is preparing for the finale on September 9th, but first heads on the Minnesota side of the bay to perform at the Deck on September 6th in celebration of the 150th anniversary of Duluth Bethel. And he joins me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Ed Willett.
Hey, Robin. Thanks. Really happy to be here. You've been a companion on the road and on the radio many a time. I was just saying on the commute to the Big Top Fridays, you're there, and I love it.
You're giving me free passageway, I think, so we appreciate that. So I said you're headed across the bay, but you'll also be bringing some of the lake with you in your repertoire. So who's performing with you, and what will you be playing?
So we have a 8-piece band, and the first half of the program on September 6th will be music that pertains to Duluth and Lake Superior, kind of setting the stage for the second half, which will be 7 world premiere tunes written for Bethel by myself and my writing partner and wife, Cheryl Leah. And in the band, we'll have Warren Nelson, his son, Rowan Nelson, who's a fabulous banjo player. We'll have Cheryl Leah and me, and Yasmin Bowers, who listeners may remember, her dad was Bruce Bowers, the fiddler for many years at the Big Top Chautauqua. He passed away, unfortunately, but Yasmin is, wow, she's really good. And then Randy Sabine will play guitar and fiddle. Tom Mitchell's our drummer. And then a local Duluth friend, Vince Osborne, he's plays in the symphony.
Right, and he's been on the show as well. Why Duluth Bethel? Obviously, 150 is an important milestone. There's also the Concert for Recovery going on. Is it related to that?
It is, yeah. In fact, they're billing it as they're both of these concerts are part of their Concert for Recovery. Usually, as you mentioned, it's just one night of concerts. But this time, because it's the 150, they wanted to do something special. And Dennis Cummings, the executive director, has been a fan of the Big Top for a long time. And when it was his time to try to think about how are we going to make something really special happen for the 150th, he thought of the Big Top. So, yeah, it's a collaboration between two really good organizations, I think.
Well, that segues to the other concert back in Bayfield, the Ode Last Night with the Blue Canvas Orchestra. Tell us about that lineup.
Well, that one is, there are going to be 20 musicians there, and it's my job to wrangle them. So I'm the one chasing people around and calling them and trying to make it all fit in a 10-pound bag, you know. So it's hosted by Michael Perry, the author and also a Tencho Radio personality. He will be doing monologues and storytelling, a little bit of that. The Blue Canvas Orchestra, there'll be 8 of us for that. Betty Ferris will be projecting images. Betty Ferris is also on our show for Duluth Bethel. She's co-founder of the Big Top Chautauqua. And then we have something very interesting happening. We have what we're calling Stars of the Open Mic. And that's a new venture that we have going. The Big Top has a new building just outside of Bayfield. And part of that building is a really great little cabaret space. Part of what we've done with that room is every Wednesday night, well, when did it start? Probably a year now. Has been open mic night, and it's sort of a way to see what's out there in the woods. You know, this area, as you know, is the same with the Duluth area. There's just hidden treasure all over the place as far as performing artists. So that's really been the case with this. And so on Old Last Night, we're having 10 of the performers that stood out to come and each do a song. So it's going to be a huge show. It's going to be really good.
All right. Well, we're speaking with Ed Willett. He'll be performing with a group at the Deck in Duluth on September 6th in celebration of the 150th anniversary of Duluth Bethel, and again with a bigger group at Big Top Chautauqua on September 9th for the Old Last Night with the Blue Canvas Orchestra. We're going to hear some music that we played at each of those, but I want to get back to your cello. Am I correct? It's not the first instrument one would think of in terms of bluegrass?
Well, that was a good, I liked your intro. Yeah, that used to be more true. I think in the last 10 years or so, we've seen cello just explode on the scene, all kinds of scene. There's jazz cello, there's bluegrass cello. There's always been a fair amount of rock cello.
Well, there's heavy metal cello. I went to one of those concerts.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yes. It's everywhere, and it's all over television, you know, soundtracks. A lot of the composers for TV now are cellists. I can tell because we all do similar things, you know, it's compositionally. But yeah, it's just this huge explosion of cello, and it's funny to me because when I started, you know, first I was an orchestral musician, and then I started playing in bands and writing music more. But at that time, there was very little I could find to model after. There wasn't a lot of what they call alternative string. That's the moniker for cello playing. There wasn't a lot out there, but boy, that has changed, and I'm glad to see it. YouTube is a endless rabbit hole of interesting things cellists are doing. I often get on there too late at night, and then suddenly it's 3 a.m. but I see some incredible things.
Well, you answered the question for me, was which came first for you, bluegrass or the cello? So I think we got that straight. Let's hear something that will be performed at the Bethel show.
Yeah, I wrote this with my writing partner, Cheryl Leah. It's the title of our part of the program, and it's written about the green light beacon on the top of the Bethel building, and as an analogy. And it's a brand new baby. It just was written and recorded a couple weeks ago for this show.
All right. And here is Safe Harbor, which is written for and will be performed at the Bethel 150th anniversary concert on September 6th.
A single candle lit in the darkness lasts a long time. In these fast and swirling endless sands, it's shown me a sign. It does not matter how high the wind or what time and tiny shape I'm. It just shines on and on. It burns. It never looks away or turns. The green of that Bethel light, safe harbor in the darkest night. The same sun shines brightly on us all. It dabbles us in. Rich or poor, it does not care. It is there when you're young and when you're old. But with the pockets of fear, we'll take hold of you. Find what caring hands can do. Thank you. There is more love in this world than there is hate. More time than impatience. If we take that time, it can never be too late. Of the powerless illuminates the light. The mother of the fatherless to cradle in the night. And on it burns. It never looks away or turns. The green of that Bethel light, safe harbor in the darkest night. Lasts a long time. In these fast and swirling endless sands, it's shown me a sign. It does not matter how high the winds or what tide and tiny shape I'm in, it just shine. On and on it burns. It never looks away or turns. The green of that Bethel light, safe harbor in the darkest night.
And that was Safe Harbor, written by our guest, Ed Willett. He'll be performing at the Deck in Duluth on September 6th in celebration of the 150th anniversary of Duluth Bethel, and again at Big Top Chautauqua for Old Last Night with the Blue Canvas Orchestra on September 9th, and a whole bunch of people appearing with him on both of those. Going back to the cello, I'm sorry, I'm kind of fixated with this. Your website states that you perform cello tracks online by request. So what sort of requests do you get? Again, you mentioned the different genres.
Yeah, a lot of it, you know, I do maybe 10 to 15 albums a year for different people. And a lot of it is what we just call singer-songwriter. It has folk tradition. Sometimes it gets a little, I enjoy funk music. So sometimes it's that way, or blues. Influences, but it's all singer-songwriter stuff. And because of technology, the advances that have happened, I have a studio here at home, just in one of the rooms, and they send me tracks that, you know, they need cello on, and I put them into my recording, into my Pro Tools setup, and I record for them and send them back. And it's an amazing thing. It's not the same as being there. You know, it's if you can all be in one place and record together, I prefer it. Maybe I'm just old school on it, but some great projects have come out of it. So, and you have access to pretty much anybody because everybody's doing this. You know, if there's a player on the other side of the world that you really think is just perfect for your song, you can collaborate. It's an amazing thing. It's
right. And of course, I don't want to say good thing about the pandemic, but it is something that we got used to and actually elaborated on in many different ways.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Actually, one thing I noticed is talking to you right now, a telephone quality has quietly improved, and in Zoom quality.
Yeah, you're right.
The audio in the beginning of Zoom was like, hello, I'm at the bottom of a barrel. That's quite improved too, although I'm not quite using that yet. Let's hear something that will be performed at Old Last Night.
Yeah, definitely. Another tune that was written by Cheryl and myself, we wrote for the 50th anniversary of Apple Fest, which is coming up here in Bayfield Fall Festival. And so I thought I'd put that into the program. So this tune is called Never Far From the Tree.
All right. That needs no elaboration. All right. Well, we will go out to the sound of Never Far From the Tree, written for Apple Fest. What could be more appropriate, by Ed Willett and Cheryl Leah. Tell us where we can find out more about your music.
Well, you can go to chanceworld.com, and that's the name of my duo with Cheryl is Chance, and we're in our 37th year of touring and performing together.
Spell that for us.
chanceworld.com.
All right. And we can also go to your website, look up your name, Ed Willett, and request a cello track if we need one of these.
Yes, you can. Because there's always room for cello, right? You know?
We've been speaking with Ed Willett. He'll be performing with the group At the Deck in Duluth on September 6th in celebration of the 150th anniversary of Duluth Bethel, and again at Big Top Chautauqua on September 9th for Ode Last Night with the Blue Canvas Orchestra. Thank you for joining us, Ed.
Hey, thanks, Robin. It's been great.
Jimmy can't stop. Look, he's got to roll. Bringing apples to the people, getting them sold. 500 bushels about to hit that road. All the way to North Dakota, he got to go. He got to go, yeah, he got to go. All the way to North Dakota, he got to go. He got to go, yeah, he's got to go. All the way to North Dakota, he got to go, yeah. He got to go.
Well, he had a bit of luck when his truck broke down. Jimmy started thinking how to turn it around. Turn it around, yeah, turn it around. Just bring the people to the apples, turn it around. Well, they turned it around, they turned it around. Brought 50 years of people coming back to the town. And when it's all said and all done, one good apple in the sun. One thing so clear to me, we're never far from the tree. We'll be picking all the fixings, we'll be chilling all night. There's a blizzard of flour gonna come down white. Hey, ain't it good to be there? Daughter, won't you help me now, working the dough? Son, get to peeling now, don't be slow. Grandpa, show these kids how to sweeten the pie, cause these years go by. Well, a ribbon will be given for the longest spiel. The story sounds tall, but I swear that it's real. We thought an apple a day would keep the doctor away. But an apple peeling doctor wanted anyway. Anyway, yeah, anyway. And apple peeling doctor wanted anyway. Anyway, oh, anyway. Well, an apple peeling doctor wanted anyway. Now a ribbon will be given to a both that close. With a queen and a theme or a quote of note. And notes will be fine from the PCO. You gotta come and see us before you go. Before you go. Before you go. You know you gotta come see us before you go. And when all's said and all's done, one good apple in the sun. One thing so clear to me, we're never far from the tree. Lining up now at the top of the hill. They'll be marching and winning, yeah, you know they will. The pipe is a pipe and in for Thunder Bay. Ain't it good to feel it? Apple dress, pretty dress, queens in a row. All coming home to us to sweeten the show. Fairies of a fair rolling by till the apples overrun. And when it's all said and all is done, one good apple in the sun. One thing so clear to me, we're never far from the tree. And when it's all said, all's done, one good apple in the sun. One thing so clear to me, we're never far from the tree.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, this spring, the Cenovus Oil Refinery in Superior reopened, though not quite up to full operations, 5 years after the explosion that caused a major evacuation in the city. Last week, there were two new incidents at the plant, though nowhere near as bad.
Yeah, that's right, Robin. The Superior Fire Department was called to a couple of leaks last week, as you said. One was a propane leak that occurred on Wednesday of last week, and another was a leak of fuel oil vapor on Thursday. And the incident Thursday led to an equipment shutdown, and all non-essential employees were evacuated from the site as a precaution. And that also occurred Wednesday as well, that employees were temporarily evacuated from the site. And as you know, around 350 people work at the plant, but authorities say there were no injuries in these incidents and that there was never any danger to the public. And part of this is related to the new fluid catalytic cracking unit at the Cenovus refinery. And if you remember, that unit is used to make gasoline at the facility, and it was involved in the explosion that occurred 5 years ago in April. And, you know, this is kind of a time that safety officials, the Occupational Safety and Hazard Administration, indicates is one of the more tense times when you have startups and shutdowns, because it's not normal operations and things can go wrong. And the company had said even last month that they were working through some normal startup issues with that unit. And basically, an emergency response team at the refinery used water, fog, streams, and steam to disperse vapors that ended up leaking out of a flange, which is like a brown kind of like connection on the unit. And so there was some venting to the atmosphere. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources was notified of these incidents. But, you know, Cenovus maintains that they're focused on safe and reliable operations. They said that the two incidents were not connected and that they're undertaking an investigation to determine the cause of that. But what we do know is that last week is the first time that they were getting up and running with that fluid catalytic cracking unit. So that marks the return to full operations for the refinery, you know, after the explosion caused roughly $500 million in damage to that plant and cost at least $1.2 billion to rebuild. And so, as we know from past reports, the U.S. Chemical Safety Board found that the refinery's lack of safeguards in that fluid catalytic cracking unit led to the explosion during a maintenance shutdown.
All right. Well, libraries are known for being quiet spaces, but there's a bit of controversy at the one in Iron River.
That's right, Robin. And earlier this month, a group of anonymous residents wrote a letter to the community about books that they claim promote certain ideas about gender, or include pornographic content. And the letter also states that they would like to see the removal of books that promote quote-unquote gender ideology or talk about transgender issues or LGBTQ plus issues. One book in particular that they targeted was a book called Let's Talk About It, a teen's guide to sex, relationships, and being a human. And so the library received a request to reconsider that book. The library board voted almost unanimously to keep that book. However, they decided to move it from the young adults to the adult section. Jacqueline Pooler, who is the director of the Iron River Public Library, said that in recent years they've been pushing to diversify their collections so that they can represent more aspects of the community. And so moving forward now, this anonymous group of residents said they're going to be holding a meeting on Wednesday, September 6th at 7 p.m. at the Community Center in Iron River, where people can share their views. They obviously want to see these types of books removed from the library. And so basically, the Iron River Public Library said that their role is to provide information for everyone, not just a certain segment of the community.
All right. Well, Rick, turning to the Minnesota side, if you're looking at developing a building in Duluth, you may have to rethink how much parking you'll need.
Yes, Duluth officials may call an end to telling developers how much parking they need to provide in order to do business in the community. Members of the Duluth Planning Commission recently heard from Tony Jordan, president of the Portland, Oregon-based Parking Reform Network, who encouraged the city to follow in the footsteps of more than 50 communities nationwide that have done away with parking mandates. Jordan suggested that local developers and entrepreneurs can be relied upon to determine their own parking needs, predicting that they'll make smart decisions about their business because it's their money on the line. It doesn't make the parking evaporate or ban new parking from being built. It's just sort of setting the stage for what's coming next. Jordan urges people to think about the large quantities of real estate parking consumes, with a single parking stall requiring 30 to 40 square feet of space. He stressed that if Duluth were to drop its parking mandates, the city would see no overnight change. Planning commissioners say parking costs can discourage investments in housing and drive up rents. And this is one way to combat the cost of construction for housing. Duluth already has no parking minimums in place for downtown and in Canal Park. City officials have been exploring greater parking deregulation since January. When told about Duluth's 5 to 6 months of winter and significant snow management issues, Jordan noted that Anchorage, Alaska did away with its parking minimums last year while also addressing snow removal needs. Buffalo, New York is another snowy city that has eliminated parking mandates.
All right. Well, if you're getting away from the city for a late summer trip to the Boundary Waters, you might find you have more of the area to yourself.
Yes. A reduction in available permits for paddlers entering the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness helped reduce the overall numbers of visitors in 2022. According to data recently released from the Superior National Forest. Nearly 151,000 people entered the federal wilderness in 2022, and that's down 9% from 166,000 people in 2021, the second summer of the pandemic and the recent peak in total visitors. The drop in visitors coincides with a 13% reduction in available permits for 2022 after the 2020 and 21 rush to get outdoors. Under those cuts, there were an average of 37.5 fewer groups allowed into the million-acre wilderness each day, with the cuts spread across several popular entry points. The reduction in permits and visitors was intended to help ease what some visitors complained felt like overcrowded even before the pandemic rush, and what the Forest Service said was too much pressure for the resource, including some people leaving trash behind, cutting live trees, and otherwise acting badly. The move is hoped to reduce overcrowding and cut back on natural resource damage. Forest Service officials said the decline was likely caused by other factors as well, such as changing travel and vacation patterns, the economy, weather, and even insects, adding that the number of visitors was down in other federal destinations nationally.
All right. And lastly, the new Arena Football League team for Duluth has chosen a name, and it sounds like a scary one.
Yes, after months of anticipation, the name and logo for Duluth Arena League football team was unveiled last week in a special ceremony at the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center. The team will be called the Duluth Harbor Monsters. The big reveal came after a Name the Team contest in which approximately 2,000 entries were submitted. The final vote was eventually whittled to four possible choices. Lakers, Sasquatch, Norsemen, and Harbor Monsters, with about 3,000 votes ultimately cast. Duluth was chosen over Twin Ports, Zenith City, and Minnesota and Lake Superior with an overwhelming 98% of the vote. Contest winner Ian Thorpe received season tickets for the inaugural season, which is slated to begin June 1 of 2024. The Harbor Monsters have already set up a headquarters on Lake Avenue in Canal Park. A custom vehicle with a team logo wrap will also be a fixture around the Duluth community. The opening season of the Arena League football will include four teams based in Springfield, Missouri, Kansas City, Waterloo, Iowa, and Duluth. Games will be played in a 50-yard field with 15-man rosters and players playing both offense and defense.
Okay. We've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Ed Willett playing Baquianas Brasileiras by Heitor Villa-Lobos. Stay safe, everyone. Thank you.